One of the real intriguing aspects of this job was the fact that you're the state university. You had the whole state behind you, 1.8 million Mountaineers behind you, and you see and you can feel the power of that when you get out in the state. In every corner of the state, you can feel the passion that people have for West Virginia athletics.
This is the Signal Caller Podcast.
From the X's to the O's to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Your inside look at West Virginia Mountaineer football, the Big 12 Conference, and the college game at large.
Now, coming to you from high atop the majestic mountains of almost heaven,
here's your host,
Jed Drenning.
Welcome to it, folks. As the saying goes, one is an accident, two is a trend, but three is a problem. Uh-oh, here we are with episode 3 of the Signal Caller Podcast, and the first thing I'd like to do is say thanks so much. The response to the first 2 episodes has been overwhelming and very positive. If you haven't had a chance to listen to them, they're obviously still available out there on the various platforms. If you haven't had a chance to check them out yet, we encourage you to do so. And also, please remember, if you like the show, rate it and review it, and comments are really encouraged too, because feedback from you guys is what's going to help us make improvements here. In fact, after you listen, if you want to reach out to us with some comments on Twitter at The Signal Caller, we'd like to get to the point where we're sharing some of those comments with the listeners here on the program. Now, what we're going to do here is pivot toward a couple different topics. And one of those, as spring ball was concluding around the country toward the end of April, there was a Sports Illustrated article written by Ross Dellinger in which Houston head coach Dana Holgorsen made some West Virginia related comments. Now, I'm still getting asked my opinion on those comments, and I thought this would be as good a platform as any to discuss my thoughts on Dana's remarks in that SI article. So we're going to get into that. But the best part is that actually dovetails into a larger discussion about WVU recruiting. More specifically, what that might look like under Neil Brown. The interesting thing is, during the spring, Neil Brown made some comments first to the team, then he repeated those comments to the media. And here's what it was. He said, "I told the team, we're going to be great here. The only question is when. I know we're going to be great. I just don't know when we're going to be great." I loved hearing that. I think all of us did. It's exactly the type of thing you might expect to hear from a head coach who just won 31 games in 3 years. Without question, Neil Brown is the type of guy who packs a frying pan when he goes fishing. And that's obviously what you want. Well, there was a point after practice one day during spring ball up in the suites at the stadium, we had an IMG booster function. And during that event, Neil Brown repeated that same message to the boosters and those on hand. And what was interesting, Tony Caridi, Tony, of course, was emceeing the event. And Tony asked Neil, "Why do you think that is? We've heard you make that comment before. What makes you believe that?" Well, in keeping with almost everything else Neil Brown does, his answer was both thoughtful and compelling. He said, "Look, I took over a program here at West Virginia that is the 14th winningest program in the history of college football. That doesn't happen by accident. That only happens when you have the support structure in place and the apparatus surrounding you that can help facilitate those wins." And the second part of his answer dealt with recruiting. He said, "Look, as I see it, we have an opportunity as a Big 12 team to sell that brand up here in a part of the country where nobody else is really making that pitch. It's not like we're recruiting against a lot of other Big 12 teams up here in this neck of the woods. We're typically recruiting against the ACC, the Big 10, to some extent the SEC, in this mid-Atlantic corridor. If this type of football that the Big 12 offers appeals to kids, well, you can be within 5-6 hours of home and play Texas and play Oklahoma, play this style of football, and it might resonate in a lot of living rooms. And Neil Brown believes that it can and it will, and it's an opportunity for West Virginia to draw talent into Morgantown." So we're going to flesh all that out on today's episode. We're going to talk about Dana Holgorsen at Houston, the comments that he made, to a lesser extent, the breakup he had with West Virginia, how Neil Brown landed here. But we're going to have a much larger discussion about recruiting at West Virginia and what it might look like under Neil Brown. We're going to talk about in-state recruiting. We're going to talk about regional recruiting in the surrounding states. We're going to talk about Neil Brown's philosophy when it comes to recruiting transfers, whether it's JUCO kids or FBS transfers. We're going to pop the hood and take a look at all those things here in just a few seconds, after a quick message from Mountaineer World, the largest Mountaineer store in the world.
To Mountaineer World, the largest WVU Mountaineer store in the world. Show your Mountaineer pride this season with Mountaineer World. Shop online 24/7 at MountaineerWorld.com. To Mountaineer World, under the big copper roof at Benny's Place in Bridgeport.
You're listening to Mountaineer Football Talk on the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
It was unprecedented. I mean, it was the first truly mutual breakup in relationship history. No rejection, no guilt, no remorse.
You've never felt remorse.
I know, I feel bad about that.
Mutual breakups. My guess is some people might refer to them as the mythical unicorns of the relationship world. Chances are that somewhere along the way out there, you probably heard about them, but you might not even be sure they're real. And the thing is, they're just as hard to find in coaching circles. In fact, I'd say they might be harder to find in coaching circles than they actually are to find in dating. But guess what, folks? They are real. And I strongly get the sense that this offseason, West Virginia football might have actually experienced one.
We can say it officially now. Dana Holgorsen is, in fact, the new head football coach at the University of Houston. Tillman Fertitta did make that announcement official.
And so it was that after posting a record of 61-41 in 8 seasons at West Virginia, which included a 33-30 mark in Big 12 play, Holgorsen left Morgantown for a 5-year package at Houston, and that package included a basic value of $20 million. It was a contract that made Holgorsen a big fish in a much smaller pond. It established him as the highest paid coach in the group of five by a chunky margin of $1.1 million annually. In fact, it was the kind of deal that, coming out of the 2018 season, WVU simply wasn't inclined to offer Holgorsen. And of course, his departure created an opportunity for West Virginia to re-energize its own fan base by landing one of the more promising head coaches in college football, Neil Brown. This mutual breakup, well, it did a couple things. It allowed Holgorsen to land a big payday in returning to a city that he knows well, while giving WVU football a fresh start under what I would call incredibly spirited new leadership. Look, this isn't about some kind of itemized tit-for-tat comparison of Dana Holgorsen and Neil Brown. I'm not going to chase that topic down that rabbit hole. They're both good coaches with their own philosophies who do a lot of things differently, but the truth is they also share, of course, a common football heritage. They both played receiver for Hal Mumme, and they've both been influenced to varying degrees throughout their career by Mike Leach. It would seem to me that one difference might be several years into their coaching careers, Dana is still in many ways defined by and identified with the turbocharged nature of that air raid offense, whereas Neil Brown kind of sort of really isn't, at least not in a top of mind kind of way. I mean, if you mention Dana Holgorsen, people probably think excitement, bravado, and offense. And if you mention Neil Brown, they likely think culture and consistency. And look, it's not even as if the differences are really a matter of right and wrong as much as they're a matter of right and left. In other words, either direction you turn can eventually take you to the same place, provided you have a steady enough hand at the wheel. Yes, there's plenty of things that are different about these two guys, and that's fine. There's more than one way to skin a cat. I mean, think about it. Dana jumps from planes and he guzzles Red Bull. Neil hosts Professor Appreciation Days and he leaves handwritten notes in players' lockers. Dana's persona might skew toward Jimmy Buffett, while Neil actually quotes Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett has a quote that I use in leadership all the time. I use it with our team. I use it with our staff. It's people do what people see. I mean, people do what people see, and I believe that with all my heart.
The truth is, WVU came out of this with a dynamic young coach who, if you know anything about football or about sports or about coaching or even about leadership, you have to be tremendously excited about Neil Brown. He's a humble guy with a ferocious desire to mold great young men both on the field and off the field. And you combine that with a genuine appreciation for the hardships of Appalachia and a well-established track record of consistently inspiring his teams to punch way above their weight. I mean, if you step back and really consider the skill set that a coach needs to be a great fit at West Virginia, the truth is, Neil Brown came straight out of Central Casting. Dana was a good coach. He was a fun guy. He won a lot of football games here at West Virginia. 61, in fact. The second most in program history. Most of us are aware of the fact that that trails only Don Nealon. But the missed opportunity down the stretch last year with that talented Will Grier-led team left a big void. And unfortunately, Holgorsen's inability to beat Oklahoma, his inability to dethrone the Sooners, will always be part of his legacy here in Morgantown. But that doesn't, on any level, diminish his gutsy call in the final seconds in Austin last year that rewarded the Mountaineers with a horns-down moment none of us are ever going to forget.
Greer in the gun. Greer, quarterback, run! Greer! He got it! 2-point conversion for West Virginia!
Nor does it take away Dana's 2 10-win seasons at West Virginia, or the upset of what looked like an unstoppable number-3-ranked Baylor team in 2014, a loss that cost the Bears a playoff spot. And it certainly doesn't devalue the historic nature of what Holgorsen's Mountaineers accomplished in the Orange Bowl.
A bowl record 70 points scored by the Mountaineers on a night where the team and a lot of the individuals rewrite the record book.
For those scoring at home, Clemson has gone 87-11 since that night in South Florida. Finally, any fair evaluation of Holgorsen's tenure at WVU should necessarily include the role he played as the coach at the helm when West Virginia underwent that challenging transition out of the Big East Conference and into the Big 12. Dana won at WVU in both conferences, and he's a smart guy who will likely win at Houston too. Matter of fact, he might even win big at Houston. But the good news is Mountaineer fans have moved on, and they're bracing for an incredibly promising future under Neil Brown. That being said, I do understand why Dana's comments in the April 30th Sports Illustrated article by Ross Dellinger did get the attention of a lot of Mountaineer fans, which is why they've been asking me about his comments in that article. Now, as we move toward this, we should probably set the table by explaining that Dana Holgorsen's polarizing quote, if in fact you choose to call it that, it came at a point in the story in which they were discussing the relative advantages or disadvantages of recruiting high school talent in and around the city of Houston compared to West Virginia. The article explained, at least in part, why Holgorsen was more inclined than most to dabble in the transfer market during his time at WVU. It pointed out that over a 10-cycle period from the years 2008 to 2017, the state of West Virginia produced 28 players that went on to sign with Power 5 programs, while during that same time, the city of Houston produced 211 Power 5 players. Now, I'm just citing this so you understand the type of information that prefaced the Dana Holgorsen quote that drew so much attention, and that Holgorsen quote was as follows. We weren't going to get high school kids at West Virginia that we were going to win the Big 12 with. Unquote. And there you have it. So the question I'm going to pose is really a pretty simple one. Was Dana Holgorsen's statement correct? Is it possible at West Virginia to get the type of high school kids that are needed to win the Big 12 Conference? In my opinion, which might be worth exactly what you paid for it, the short answer is yes, it is possible, though it's not easy. But let's go ahead and dig into that. And in doing so, let's start with this. Win the Big 12 Conference is code speak for beat Oklahoma. At least that's been the case in recent years. Holgorsen actually had a winning record against 5 of the 9 Big 12 programs that he faced each year. The problem was he couldn't get over the crimson and cream hump. His 0-7 record against Oklahoma isn't something people are going to forget, including himself. And the thing about it is, those losses, they came in all shapes and sizes. Some were close, so close you could taste the win before it slipped away. Some were over by halftime. Under Dana Holgorsen, West Virginia led OU with 12 minutes to go and lost. That, of course, happened last year in that heartbreaker. In 2012, the Mountaineers led the Sooners in the final 30 seconds of the game and lost. That ended with that Landry Jones to Kenny Stills touchdown pass at Mountaineer Field. WVU posted a 500-yard passer against OU and lost. Twice against Oklahoma, West Virginia produced pass catchers with over 200 yards receiving and lost. Also on two occasions under Holgorsen, WVU had a 300-yard rusher against the Sooners and lost both times. During one trip to Norman, West Virginia forced 4 turnovers and held the Sooners to 16 points and lost. In short, WVU had its chances under Holgorsen, even against the Sooners, but they didn't make the most of those chances. They were close several times, nearly pushing for an opportunity to stay in the Big 12 title mix, but never finished the job as Oklahoma time after time after time knocked them back down the hill. They just couldn't dethrone the Sooners. In fact, Holgorsen himself talked about that fact in the actual SI article. Now, obviously, I don't presume to speak for Dana Holgorsen, but the fact that West Virginia was in the hunt, and a couple times at least, pushed the envelope toward that elusive Big 12 title, well, those things lead me to believe that Holgorsen, in his quote, wasn't suggesting WVU can't win the Big 12 Conference. Instead, I think it's much more likely he was suggesting West Virginia can't win the Big 12 Conference with high school talent alone, which is why they tapped so heavily into the transfer market. And nobody's going to dispute that they mined that vein very well under Holgorsen, as the Mountaineers saw 8 different transfers, whether they were FBS transfers or junior college transfers, become NFL draft picks over the course of the last 5 years.
Carolina Panthers select Will Grier, quarterback, West Virginia.
And when you listen to Neil Brown discuss his own recruiting strategy, it's apparent that transfers will still play a critical role in the composition of his roster at West Virginia. The difference under Brown might be that transfers could be viewed more as long-term prospects and, when possible, approached that way.
We have a lot of ties, recruiting ties, in some really good junior college areas in Mississippi, Kansas. I look forward to getting here in the Northeast because the football in the Northeast junior colleges above us has gotten really competitive and they've had some really good players here. The thing that we're we're going to do a little bit different from a junior college standpoint is we're going to recruit those players for a year plus, almost like you would go about recruiting a high school student athlete.
Since Neil Brown arrived on the job, we've seen a growing list of transfer players infused into the Mountaineer roster. Players like Oklahoma quarterback Austin Kendall, or junior college defensive lineman Taj Alston, or Temple wide receiver Sean Ryan, or more recently, Florida State wide receiver George Campbell, and Michigan defensive lineman Reuben Jones. The list continues to grow, and this all does suggest that Neil Brown plans to keep the transfer pipeline into Morgantown open. And why wouldn't he? It's an added wrinkle in recruiting that served the West Virginia program very well in recent years. In terms of high school prospects, the state of West Virginia has traditionally had some limitations, and that's probably at least in part because a population of just over 1.8 million people can only yield so much talent. This isn't news to anybody, but there are players produced by the Mountain State that can help you win football games at the major college level, and the good news is there has been evidence in recent years suggesting that the FBS talent produced by the state of West Virginia might, for a number of different reasons, be coming at least a little more abundant. That's definitely a trend in the right direction, but we got to remember, recruiting isn't done in a vacuum. There's a lot of things to consider beyond the town or the state listed on a prospect's driver's license. Sometimes a kid might have a pre-existing relationship with someone on a staff at a school outside your state that you have to overcome, and sometimes it comes down to priorities or even numbers. For example, you could probably argue that West Virginia could have more effectively handled its pursuit of in-state wide receiver Ryan Switzer when he came out of George Washington High School back in 2013. Switzer, of course, went on to a terrific career at North Carolina, and he's still in the NFL. But it has to be considered that in that 2013 class, Dana Holgorsen signed four receivers, Kevin White, Shelton Gibson, Mario Alford, and Dakeel Shorts, who all produced at WVU and went on to spend time on NFL rosters or at least in NFL camps. So it wasn't as if West Virginia missed on the four receivers it did sign, because they obviously all worked out for the Mountaineers. The caveat here might be that later that year during the summer, technically as part of the same recruiting class, West Virginia spent another scholarship on another receiver in Ronald Carswell, a transfer from Alabama, who obviously didn't work out. So there was another scholarship at play there that technically could have been used more effectively on another receiver in that class, as Ryan Switzer left the state to go accomplish great things at North Carolina and beyond. But to suggest that hitting on four out of five kids at one position in one signing class isn't effective recruiting is probably splitting hairs and judging way too harshly. But that, of course, wasn't the only time that Dana Holgorsen was criticized for not pursuing in-state talent with enough vigor. In fact, when Holgorsen's comments from this SI article hit Twitter and his remarks about not being able to recruit the high school talent needed at West Virginia to win the Big 12, he was called out by Darnell Wright, the number one prospect in the state of West Virginia from Huntington High School, who of course signed with Tennessee, when Wright said in a tweet, "You gotta try first." Contrast that with the incredibly hard push made by Brown when he took his entire staff to Huntington to try and flip Darnell Wright in the 11th hour after getting hired in Morgantown. Sure, that effort might have fallen short, but it did make an undeniable statement toward the importance Brown places and will continue to place on securing the high school talent that the state of West Virginia does produce.
Small, relatively small population, not as large a number of Division I prospects as some other states with larger populations, but we do play really good football here, and there's really good players, and the Division I players in this state, we have to make a top priority and keep those guys here and make sure they're playing in West Virginia.
Now, if the uptick in talent generated by the state continues and it can stabilize around four or five or maybe even six major college prospects annually, the timing could be perfect with the hiring of Brown and his staff, who have made it a priority to keep homegrown talent here to play for West Virginia. They might not win every battle, but they're sure going to try, and expect that commitment to bear fruit moving forward as Brown and company forge relationships within the high school football circles of the state of West Virginia. Just do the math. If the state continues to produce four, five, or more worthy prospects a year, and if Brown finds a way to consistently land most, or in some cases maybe even all of those kids, that adds up. Over a four-year cycle, that could mean 15 to 20 homegrown scholarship players in the West Virginia locker room, potentially serving as part of the backbone of Neil Brown's team. And that's before you even start to discuss the ancillary benefits that incredibly active recruiting throughout the entire state will have with the walk-on program at WVU. And as we talked about in the introduction to this episode, Brown's larger recruiting strategy will, of course, extend beyond West Virginia to involve the surrounding states, especially those areas within a 5 to 6 hour radius of Morgantown, with Brown selling a West Virginia brand that he thinks is a recognizable and compelling one, and with WVU coaches selling a product, the Big 12, that no other program in this part of the country can really offer.
Having a strong brand within this geographic footprint is critical. We feel like that we can compete and win against anybody. If we do our job and we're diligent and build relationships, we should have as good a chance as anybody in West Virginia and all the states that surround it.
In fairness to Dana Holgorsen, maybe his statement wasn't that far off. Change just a couple words and it might in fact be on point. What he could have said was, West Virginia wasn't going to recruit the type of high school kids that should win the Big 12. But we all know that's the beauty of WVU sports. The Mountaineers rarely accept the limitations the world tries to put on them. Most of us are willing to admit that nothing about the pecking order of big-time college sports suggests that West Virginia, saddled with a small population, limited resources, and other challenges, should consistently prove remarkable. But with a history replete with shining moments, we know they somehow do. Through some magical combination of administrative creativity from the top down, that probably includes the president and the athletic director, solid coaching, exceptional player development, and a mountain-sized chip on their shoulder, WVU sports teams through the years have achieved countless things that naysayers said shouldn't be in their wheelhouse. Should the 2019 Mountaineer baseball program have been able to sweep league honors with both pitcher and coach of the year in a conference as baseball-rich as the Big 12? Or string together a resume impressive enough to host their first NCAA regional since 1955? Probably not, but they did. Should the Mountaineer men's basketball team have made 7 Sweet 16 appearances since 2005?
West Virginia goes to the Final Four the first time in 51 years.
Maybe not, but they have. Should Don Nealon's Mountaineers have gone unbeaten twice in a 5-year span and faced Notre Dame for the national title 3 decades ago? Probably not, but they did. Should WVU have stormed out to a 28-0 lead in the first 16 minutes of the game against the SEC champions as West Virginia did in its Sugar Bowl win over Georgia?
Wow, the folks that came dressed in blue and gold are enjoying it right now.
Probably not, but they did. Should West Virginia have been able to drop 70 points on a 10-win ACC champion in the Orange Bowl? Or ambush the number 3-ranked team in the country in the Fiesta Bowl just weeks after losing their head coach? Probably not, but they did. West Virginia's history of leaving the odds at the door is just one more reason to believe Neil Brown is a perfect fit for the Mountaineers. At Troy, he made his name by taking the Trojans to places the skeptics said they shouldn't be able to go. He did so by consistently recruiting well. Troy's average recruiting class ranking during Brown's tenure was the best in the Sun Belt Conference, despite never actually fielding the league's number 1 class. And he did so by producing outcomes on the field that easily outpaced those solid results on the recruiting trail. Max Olson wrote an interesting piece for The Athletic in February in which he revisited the 2015 recruiting class of all FBS schools. That was Brown's first signing class at Troy. And Olson re-ranked those classes 4 years later based on their body of work on the field. The actual ranking 247 Sports had given that 2015 Troy class was 117th in the country. 4 years later, after that group won 35 games, including 3 bowls, and produced multiple All-Sun Belt performers, Olson re-ranked the Troy class number 19 in the country, tucked neatly between Miami and Wisconsin. That is overachievement in spades, and it's the foundation for making the kind of history that doubters say you shouldn't. Should Troy have been able to make its first ever appearance in the Associated Press Top 25? Probably not, but under Brown, they did. Should Brown's Trojans have been able to march out of 30,000-seat Veterans Memorial Stadium in the wiregrass of South Central Alabama and into the most intimidating venues in college football and topple the biggest brands in the game?
Welcome to legendary Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge, site of tonight's contest between the Troy Trojans and your Fighting Tigers of LSU.
Certainly not, but they did. So let's wrap this up and put a cap on it by answering the question we asked At the outset of this discussion, was Dana Holgorsen right? Are you truly unable at West Virginia to attract the high school talent that can help you win the Big 12 Conference? I believe you can get those players in Morgantown, and I believe Neil Brown and his staff will find a way to do so. What's more, once West Virginia does get them, I believe they'll help the Mountaineers do that very thing and win the Big 12 Conference, even though many folks will say they probably shouldn't. Time once again to get in victory formation as we run the clock out. Thanks so much for listening. If you did enjoy the episode, tell a friend, rate us, and subscribe for future episodes because they will be coming. And don't forget to reach out to us on Twitter at The Signal Caller with your comments because we'd love to get to the point in the future where we're sharing some of your tweets and some of your comments with the listeners here on the podcast. There's going to be a lot to talk about moving into the summer, including the X's and O's. We'll get into Neil Brown's schemes on both sides of the football, what he's done at Troy, what he's done at past stops in his coaching career, and how that might translate at West Virginia and against teams in the Big 12 Conference. So we sure hope that you come back and visit us again. In the meantime, I'll see you at the 50.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
The fun doesn't have to stop here.
Be sure to hit subscribe on your podcatcher now and never miss an episode.
If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback,
head over right now to Twitter at The Signal Caller and get involved.
Join us again next time.
Until then,
we'll see you at the 50.